strong but alien energy signature.
I don't know, she said. I've never seen anything like that before.
I have,
Thrawn said thoughtfully.
But the energy shield I saw was aboard a ship. This one appears to be protecting a building.
It's a shield?
Ciri asked. Now that he mentioned it, it was shaped like the shields of the old-time warriors she'd seen pictures of.
Is that like our electrostatic barriers?
Same protective function, but much stronger and more versatile,
Thrawn said.
The Ascendancy would benefit greatly from that technology.
Ciri looked sideways at him. He wasn't thinking of trying to go down there, was he? Not with all those robot things buzzing around. He seemed to sense her look and her sudden fears.
Don't worry. We're not going to charge in on our own,
he assured her.
Though with a full complement of decoys aboard, getting through their sentry screen would be trivial. Still, an aerial force implies a similar ground force, and you and I are hardly equipped to deal with that degree of opposition.
Okay,
Ciri said cautiously. He still had that intense look in his eyes.
So, what are we doing?
Our mission has always been to find allies,
Thrawn said, reaching forward and manipulating one of the sensor controls.
But perhaps we don't need an entire army of them.
How many people do we need?
He pointed at one of the other displays.
Let's start with one.
Ciri blinked in surprise. Centered in the display was another ship, about the size as theirs. It was floating all dark and silent and low power, and was clearly watching the same buzzing robot ships she and Thrawn were.
Who's that?
No idea, Thrawn said. But the appearance and energy profile don't match any of the other ships we've seen since leaving the Chaos.
Doesn't look like the robot ships either,
Ciri offered.
Excellent observation, Thrawn said.
And Ciri felt her face warm with satisfaction at the compliment.
It's possible the pilot is scouting for the opposite side of the war. If so, we may have found an ally. There.
Ciri stiffened. The other ship's energy profile had suddenly changed. Even as she opened her mouth to ask what was going on, the ship rotated a few degrees, and with a flicker, it disappeared into hyperspace.
Quickly now,
Thrawn said, and Ciri's board went dark as he took control.
Get ready for third sight.
We're going after it?
Actually, I'm hoping to get ahead of it,
Thrawn said, running power to the thrusters and hyperdrive.
The first world we visited was the most populous, and therefore the most likely place from which to send a message or to rendezvous with allies.
Wouldn't one of the more empty worlds be better for that?
In theory, yes, Thrawn said. But a scout would want to avoid drawing any more attention than necessary. The fewer the inhabitants, the more scrutiny is automatically attached to strangers.
Okay,
Ciri said, making a face as she activated the navigator board. By the time they were ready, the other ship would have a good 10-minute lead on them.
How did Thrawn think she could get ahead of it?
It'll be all right if we arrive second, Thrawn said. But even with their lead, I have no doubt we'll arrive first.
A ship that size is unlikely to have a hyperdrive and navigational system equal to a Chiss ship and a Chiss Skywalker.
Ciri hunched her shoulders once she got a grip on the controls. Darn right. They were Chiss, and they were not going to lose a race. Not to anyone.
I'm ready,
she said.
Tell me when.
Ciri's first thought when she came out of her third sight trance was that she'd lost. The other ship was nowhere to be seen. Not approaching the planet, not in orbit around it. She sighed, pressing her hand to her throbbing head. She'd tried so hard.
but...
There, Thrawn said.
Ciri felt her eyes widen, her headache instantly forgotten. He was right. The ship they'd seen watching the robot craft had just emerged from hyperspace.
What do we do now?
Let's see if they're interested in talking.
He keyed the comm. Unidentified ship. This is Senior Captain Mithron Yerodo of the Chiss Ascendancy, he said in Minisiat.
Can you understand me?
Silence. Thrawn repeated the greeting in T'Arja, then in Mees Kauf, then Sibisti. Ciri was trying to remember if there were any more trade languages she'd ever heard of when there was an answering ping from the comm.
Hello, Senior Captain Mithron Yerodo,
a woman's voice came in Mees Kauf.
What can I do for you?
It is considered courteous for one party of a conversation to offer his or her name to the other, Thrawn said.
You think we're going to have a conversation?
We seem to be doing so, Thrawn pointed out.
There was a short pause. The other ship, Ciri noted, was heading toward the planet, without any hint that the pilot might be interested in a closer look at the Chiss visitor.
Call me Ducha,
the woman said.
My turn. Does the Chiss Ascendancy favor the Republic or the Separatists?
Neither, Thrawn said. We take no side in this war of yours.
Then I see no reason to talk to you. No offense. You haven't seen a Nubian ship land lately, have you?
What does it look like?
Shiny silvery metal. Smooth curves, no angles. Twin engine pods?
We have not seen it.
Conversation over, then. Nice talking to you.
There was another ping as she shut off the connection. Ciri looked at Thrawn, expecting him to call Ducha back and try to persuade her, maybe offer to work together. But to her surprise, he merely closed down the comm.
You're just letting her go?
She asked.
She's not a warrior, Thrawn said, his voice thoughtful. A scout, perhaps. A spy. Clearly someone with training, but not a warrior.
How do you know she's had training?
Her ship is armed, he said. And as we spoke, she rotated slightly so the weapons could be more quickly brought to bear if necessary.
Oh,
Ciri said. She hadn't seen any of that.
What do we do?
We wait, he said. As I said, she's a scout or a spy. Sooner or later, a warrior will come.
The warrior Ciri and Thrawn were waiting for, it seemed, was in no great hurry. Thrawn and Ciri had been waiting 3 days when the silvery ship Ducha had talked about appeared. It disappeared into the trees a fair distance from a settlement built in and around a group of black stone or wooden spires. A few hours later, Ducha's ship rose from the forest and headed away, pursued briefly and uselessly by a couple of the planet's patrol ships. Ciri waited for the Nubian to follow it, but the big silver ship remained hidden. And then, again, nothing. Thrawn spent the day studying all the information he could find on the planet, which Ciri learned was named Batu, and giving Ciri more piloting exercises with the control board in simulator mode. Ciri, for her part, ran the exercises over and over and over and over again. Thrawn hadn't actually said so, but she had a strong suspicion that when the expected warrior arrived, Thrawn would be leaving the scout ship in her hands. When that happened, she was determined not to let him down. And then, even as Ciri was privately about to give up hope, he was there.
Unidentified ship. This is General Anakin Skywalker of the Galactic Republic.
The pilot said over the scout ship's speaker. The Mies Kauf words a little mangled, but mostly correct.
You're intruding on Republic equipment and interfering with a Republic mission. I order you to pull back and identify yourself.
I greet you, Thrawn said in turn. Did you give your name as General Skywalker?
I did. Why? Have you heard of me?
Thrawn caught Ciri's eye as he touched the mute button.
Interesting coincidence, he commented.
Ciri nodded. The pilot had spoken the word as if it was his name, but probably he'd just messed up the language. Thrawn unmuted the comm.
No, not at all, he said. I was merely surprised. Let me assure you, I mean no harm to you or your equipment. I merely wished a closer look at this interesting device.
Glad to hear it. You've had your look. Pull back as ordered.
Thrawn pursed his lips thoughtfully. Then, very deliberately, he eased the ship back from the ring they'd moved up to examine.
May I ask what brings a Republic envoy to this part of space?
He asked.
May I ask what business it is of yours? You can be on your way at any time.
On my way?
To continue your travels? To go wherever you were going before you stopped to look at my hyperdrive ring?
Again, Thrawn touched mute.
Opinion.
Ciri blinked. He was asking her opinion on this? Her opinion?
I don't know anything about things like this.
You're a Chiss,
Thrawn reminded her.
As such, you have instincts and judgment. Perhaps more than you know. Do you think you'll make a good ally?
Ciri crinkled her nose. She'd never met this person. She'd barely even heard him speak.
Yet she could sense confidence in him, and strength, and commitment. Yes, she said. I do.
Thrawn nodded and unmuted the comm.
Yes, I could continue on my way, he said. But it might be more useful for me to assist you in your quest.
I already told you. I was on a Republic mission. It's not a quest.
Yes, I recall your words, Thrawn said. But I find it hard to believe that a Republic at war would send a lone man in a lone fighter craft on a mission. I find it more likely that you travel on a personal quest.
I'm on a mission, directly ordered here by Supreme Chancellor Palpatine himself. And I don't have time for this.
Agreed, Thrawn said. Perhaps it would be best if I were to simply show you the location of the ship you seek.
There was a short pause.
Explain,
the pilot said quietly.
I know where the Nubian ship landed, Thrawn told him. I know the pilot is missing.
So you intercepted a private transmission?
I have my own sources of information. Like you, I seek information on that and other matters. Also like you, I'm alone. Without the resources to successfully investigate. Perhaps in alliance, we may find the answers both of us seek.
Interesting offer. You say it's just the two of us?
Yes,
Thrawn said. He glanced at Ciri.
Plus my pilot and your droid, of course.
You didn't mention your pilot.
Neither did you mention your droid. Since neither will be joining us in our investigation, I didn't think they entered into the discussion.
R2 usually comes with me on missions.
Indeed,
Thrawn said, cocking an eyebrow.
Interesting. I was unaware that navigational machines had other uses. Do we have an alliance?
The pilot hesitated. Ciri motioned. And Thrawn touched mute.
The pilot of the other ship is missing?
I don't know for certain, Thrawn said. But the lack of activity suggests that may be the case. He shrugged slightly. Besides, General Skywalker clearly cares about him or her. Raising the level of urgency should help him make up his mind.
So what answers are you looking for?
Skywalker said. Thrawn touched the key.
I wish to more fully understand this conflict in which you are embroiled. I wish answers of right and wrong, of order and chaos, of strength and weakness, of purpose and reaction.
Again, Thrawn looked at Chiri. And then, suddenly, he straightened up a bit in his seat.
You asked my identity. I am now prepared to give it. I am Commander Mithron Nerodo, officer of the Expansionary Defense Fleet, servant of the Chiss Ascendancy. On behalf of my people, I ask your assistance in learning of this war before it sweeps its disaster over our own worlds.
Chiri frowned. Commander? She thought he was a senior captain. Had he been demoted? Probably not. More likely, he was just downplaying his rank for some reason. Maybe so General Skywalker wouldn't feel threatened by Thrawn's more extensive military experience. Certainly Skywalker sounded a lot younger than Thrawn.
I see,
Skywalker said.
Very well. On behalf of Chancellor Palpatine and the Galactic Republic, I accept your offer.
Excellent, Thrawn said. Perhaps you will begin by telling me the true story of your quest.
I thought you already knew. You know about Padme's ship.
The Nubian?
Thrawn shrugged.
The design and power system were unlike anything else I've seen in this region. Your craft displays similar characteristics. It was logical that one visiting stranger was seeking the other.
Ah, you're right. The Nubian is one of ours. It carried a Republic ambassador who came here to collect information from an informant. She failed to contact us. I was sent to look for her.
Chiri frowned. Was Duja the informant Skywalker was talking about? In that case, shouldn't they tell him that she'd already left Batuu?
I see, Thrawn said. Was this informant trustworthy?
Yes.
You are certain of that?
The ambassador was.
Then betrayal is unlikely. Has the informant contacted you?
No.
In that case, the most likely scenarios are accident or capture. We need to travel to the surface to determine which it was.
That's where I was heading when you barged in. You said you knew where her ship was?
I can send you the location. But it might be more convenient for you to first come aboard. I have a 2-passenger shuttle in which we can travel together.
Thanks, but I'll take my own ship in. Like I said, we might need R2 down there.
Very well. I'll lead the way.
Fine, whenever you're ready.
I'll make preparations at once. One additional thought. Chiss names are difficult for many species to properly pronounce. I suggest you address me by my core name, Thrawn.
That's all right, Mithron Nerodo. I think I can handle it.
Mithron Nerodo.
It's what I said, Mithron Nerodo.
It's pronounced Mithron Nerodo.
Yes. Mithron Nerodo.
Mithron Nerodo.
It was all Chiri could do to not break out in giggles. She could hear the difference as well as Thrawn could, but Skywalker clearly didn't get it. But at least he wasn't stubborn enough to keep kicking at the wall.
Fine,
he growled.
Thrawn.
Thank you. It will make things easier. My shuttle is prepared. Let us depart.
He keyed off the comm and began to unstrap.
You'll be all right here alone,
he asked, looking closely at Chiri. She swallowed hard. Did she have a choice? Actually, yes, she realized suddenly. She did. Clearly, Thrawn was willing to back out of the agreement he'd just made if Chiri asked him to stay with her. But they'd come out here looking for allies against the Nicardoon. Skywalker might be their best hope of that. She squared her shoulders.
I'm fine, she said. Tell me what to do.
Go back to the system with the energy shield, he said. Stay well clear of the robot ships. When I signal, you're to come down to the place with the energy shield, using decoys to keep the robots away from your course.
Okay,
Chiri said. She'd only used the decoys in simulations, but it had looked pretty easy.
How many should I use?
As many as you need, he said. In fact, you might as well use them all. If this works as I hope it will, we'll be heading straight back to the Ascendancy without any need to face other potential threats.
All right.
She took a deep breath.
Are you going to be all right?
Of course, he said, smiling confidently. I'll be armed, and I have every confidence that General Skywalker will be a powerful ally.
He looked out the canopy.
But I believe I'll also put on my combat uniform. Just in case.
Chapter 18. Even in one of the extra-fast express tunnel cars reserved for 9 families' use, the trip to the Myth homestead took nearly 4 hours. During that time, Thalias and Thurfian spoke only once, midway through the trip. When Thurfian asked if she wanted anything to eat, she didn't. Not because she wasn't a little hungry, but because she didn't want to feel obligated to him. The rest of the trip was made in silence. Thalias had never been to the vast cavern that housed the Myth family's Chila homestead, but she'd seen pictures and looked at maps, and as they approached the final checkpoint, she was fully prepared to look upon the ancestral site of her adoptive family. She was wrong. Completely and thoroughly wrong. The cavern was larger than she'd expected. Way larger. Large enough that there were actual clouds drifting across the sky. A panoramic blue she would have been prepared to swear was an actual sky above an actual planetary surface. Peeking out from behind the clouds was the blazing disk of a sun she would also have sworn was real. On both sides of the tunnel car tracks were stream-fed lakes. The one on the right big enough that the light wind rustling through the orchards and gardens was able to churn up small waves across its surface. A dozen buildings clustered around the lakes or nestled under the forest that stretched off past the lake to the left. Some of the structures were clearly equipment sheds. Others seemed to be homes. The latter large enough to each house 2 or 3 families in comfort. In the distance, near the cavern's far end, was a range of mountains shrouded in mist. Whether they were built into the wall or were freestanding, she couldn't tell. And in the center of the cavern, rising majestically from the grassland and garden arcs surrounding it, was a mansion. It was huge, 8 floors at least, with side wings that stretched out a couple 100 meters. It looked vaguely like one of the old fortresses that had been common in the days before the Chiss learned to travel the stars. But the design was somewhat more modern and lacked the bristling weapons clusters that had made those ancient structures so intimidating. The exterior was all patterned stone, glass, and burnished steel, with small angled observation turrets at the corners and an asymmetric tessellated roof that gleamed in the artificial sunlight.
I assume this is the first time you've been here?
Thurfian asked. Thalias found her voice.
Yes, she said. All my other dealings with the family were at their compound on Avidich. The
pictures don't do this place justice.
Of course not,
Thurfian said.
Fully accurate, fine-grained pictures might contain clues to the homestead's precise location. We certainly can't have that.
I thought this was the Myths family's old land.
It is, Thurfian said. But that land covers over 6,000 square kilometers and includes many other caverns like this one, all of which have tube car access. Trust me, no one arrives at the Myth homestead without Myth family permission. This is your last chance to change your mind about the trials.
Thalia has braced herself. I'm ready.
Maybe. We'll find out, won't we?
The car came to a stop 100 meters from the front of the house, beside a large mosaic design set into the ground.
Your first trial,
Thurfian said, as the canopy slid back.
Find your path. If you succeed, you'll be invited inside. If you fail, get back in the car, and you'll be taken back to the spaceport.
He climbed out, walking along the edge of the mosaic, and headed toward the mansion.
Gingerly, Thalia stepped out of the car, frowning at the mosaic. It seemed familiar. And then she got it. The whole thing was a stylized map of the Ascendancy. Find your path, Thurfian had said. Did that mean she was supposed to trace out her hopes for the future? No, of course not, she realized suddenly. The whole existence of this homestead was a grand gesture to Myth family history. She wasn't supposed to trace out her future. She was supposed to trace out the path that had brought her here. She took a deep breath. She barely remembered her life before the Skywalker Corps, but she knew she'd been born on Colonial Station Kamco. That was there, walking gingerly across the map, making sure she didn't touch any other planets along the way. She stepped onto the Kamco mark. For a moment, nothing happened. She was wondering if she needed to lean over and touch it with her hand when the area around the planet lit up briefly with a green glow. She huffed out a relieved breath as the glow faded away. Okay. From there, she'd traveled to the expansionary fleet complex on Naperar, where she'd received her Skywalker training. Again, being careful not to touch any of the other planets, she walked over to Naperar and stood on it. Again, she was rewarded by a green glow. Next, she froze. Next had been a series of voyages outside the Ascendancy in her role as a Skywalker, guiding military and diplomatic ships to alien worlds and nations. Only none of those worlds were on the map. Should she go to whichever Chiss system had been closest to those? No, that couldn't be right. The mosaic was a flat projection of a three-dimensional region of space, and there was no way to know from here which Chiss planet was closest to a given alien nation. But then, what was she supposed to do? She looked up at the house. History. But the history of the Ascendancy. She looked back at the map. The last trip she'd taken as a Skywalker, the one where she'd met Thrawn, had been from Rentor to Naperar. She crossed to Rentor and gingerly stepped on it. To her relief, the mosaic again glowed green around her feet. She crossed to Naperar and was again rewarded. All right. Next had been a trip to Avidich to meet with the Myth Aristocra who'd brought her into the family. Then off to Jammeron for her formal schooling. There were three more worlds after that, and each green glow brought back memories of sights and sounds and aromas she'd almost forgotten. By the time she stepped on Chila, it was almost as if she'd actually revisited those places. The ground again glowed green.
Welcome,
Mitheli Astov.
A disembodied voice rose from the mosaic.
Proceed to the ancient home to begin your next trial.
Thelius took a deep breath.
I obey, she said.
Walking across the mosaic, her mind still swirling with memories, she stepped onto the soft swish grass and headed toward the house.
There were a lot of trials. The first four or five were relatively easy. Written tests involving general knowledge, logic, problem-solving, and ascendancy history. It was like being in school again. And while Thelius had only been a fair student, she'd always loved learning. She breezed through them with relative ease, wondering if the rest of the trials would be as straightforward. They weren't. Next came a test to see if she could cross a 3-meter-wide water channel without getting wet, using only boards that were 2.5 meters long each. After that, she had to climb a smooth-barked tree to reach a sight line that would reveal the answer to an ancient myth riddle. Another family riddle required her to find a subtle pattern in the flower arcs surrounding the mansion. More than once, as she worked through the puzzles, she wondered if these trials had been devised since the homestead was moved under the Chila surface, or if they predated that time. If it was the latter, it meant everything that had once been up there had been duplicated in meticulous detail. Somehow, that degree of commitment didn't surprise her. She'd assumed the trials would end with the settings of the cavern's artificial sun. Again, she was wrong. A short 6-hour sleep interval, and it was back to another battery of written tests and a couple more outdoor logic problems. During the entire time, from the moment Thurfian left her at the mosaic map, she hadn't seen another living being. All her instructions had come via the same disembodied voice she'd heard when she'd first arrived, while her meals and room were waiting when she arrived at the designated places. Finally, 2 hours past her small noontime meal, she was sent on the final trial. To climb to the top of the mountain she'd seen rising up behind the mansion. At first, it didn't look too challenging. There was a clearly marked trail. The initial slope was only a few degrees, and the frequent clumps and lines of trees promised lots of shade against the blazing sunlight. Making a private bet with herself that she would be back down in time for an early dinner, she started up. The nice, shallow slope didn't last much past the first line of trees. Fortunately, as the mountain steepened, the path switched to an almost horizontal switchback-type arrangement that would angle her along the side of the mountain instead of straight up it. A less rigorous climb, but now also considerably longer. Mentally revising her estimate as to how long this would take, she kept going. She'd been on the path for perhaps an hour and had made the third switchback turn when she began seeing tall spikes sticking out of the ground beside the path. There were 6 in the first group, one of them about 1 meter tall and 5 centimeters in diameter. The other 5 half or a third that height and proportionally thinner. Thalia studied them as she walked past, wondering if this was the lead-in to another puzzle. The taller spike seemed to have a textured or carved surface, and for a moment, she considered leaving the path for a closer look. But while her orders hadn't said she couldn't look at the spikes, they hadn't specifically said she could either. At this late stage in the trials, she decided, it would be best to err on the side of caution. Unless this was supposed to be a test of initiative. Thalia scowled. Mind games inside mind games. Still, she could see through the trees that there were more groups of spikes upslope of her current position. She'd keep going and watch for some pattern that would hopefully indicate how exactly she was supposed to jump on this one. She'd assumed the cluster she'd seen through the tree would be the next one. To her mild surprise,
She found a trail of much shorter spikes laid out along the path immediately after the first group. Some of the spikes seemed to be alone, while others formed small groups. Usually there was a slightly taller spike at the center, though none of these had the height or elaborate texturing of the first one she'd encountered. Frowning at each spike as she passed, looking for the still elusive pattern she knew had to be there, she continued. 2 switchbacks later, the spike clusters suddenly reappeared with a vengeance. Another tall spike, even longer and more elaborately carved than the first one, was set back 15 meters from the path on a small hummock. Nestled around it were at least 50 other spikes, again of varying heights, again with no pattern of size or positioning she could see. From that point on, the spikes never went away. Tall ones, short ones, occasional huge ones. They were all over the place, set back from the path or running right up beside it. 2 more switchbacks, she decided, as she once again changed direction. 2 more switchbacks, and if she hadn't found a pattern by then, she would head over for a closer look.
Impressive, aren't they?
Thalias jerked, nearly twisting her ankle as she spun around toward the voice. Set 10 meters from the latest curve in the path, beneath the gently waving branches of a group of trees, was a carved wooden bench. Seated at one end was an old man, his skin pale with age, his eyes unusually bright as he peered out of the shadows. His hands were folded together in front of him, resting on top of a walking stick that was as elaborately carved as any of the spikes Thalias had seen.
Yes, they are,
she replied, her heart beating a little faster. The first person she'd seen since Thurfian disappeared. He might have been reading her mind.
No, I'm not part of the trials,
he said with an amused and rather conspiratorial smile.
They don't know I'm even up here. Probably tearing their hair out looking for me. But I wanted to speak with you in private, and this seemed the best way to do it.
I've been here for 2 days,
Thalias reminded him, trying to get a clear view through the dappling of light through the tree leaves. She'd seen that face somewhere before.
Oh, I know,
he said.
I've been watching you. But while it may have looked like you were alone, you never were. Not until they sent you up here.
He waved a hand around him.
Besides, there's such a rich sense of myth history on this mountain. Makes it the best place to discuss the future of our family.
His waving hand stopped at the group of spikes Thalias had just been studying and extended a finger to point at the largest one.
What do you think?
I don't know,
Thalias stalled.
He looked so familiar. It's impressive enough, but I don't...
Impressive?
The old man gave a snort.
Hardly. He was a grandstander who always put his own glory above the family. At some point, you see, bringing in trial-borns and turning them into cousins becomes less about the family's needs and more about impressing those who are dazzled by mere numbers.
Yes, of course,
Thalias said, an electric jolt running through her as she realized what she was looking at. Someone of myth blood, a syndic, counselor, or some other upper-level aristocrat, was memorialized here. The large spike, surrounded by the memorials of those he'd brought into the myth from other families. And with a second jolt, she finally recognized the old man facing her. You're Mithor Akiord, she breathed. You're the Patriarch.
Very good, Thoraki said. You paid attention to the row of simulatings along the grand hallway. Impressive,
he shrugged.
Sadly, that level of observation skill has nothing to do with the trials, or you'd have just earned yourself extra points.
Thank you, Your Venerante,
Thalia said.
But honestly, I don't think you're the type to be dazzled by mere numbers.
Very good, my dear Thalias,
the Patriarch said, his smile broadening.
Indeed not. I search for quality and cleverness.
He cocked his head slightly.
Speaking of which, I was called away as you were starting the Water Channel Challenge. Haven't had a chance to review the recordings. Would you be so good as to enlighten me as to your solution?
It wasn't that hard, Thalia said. The channel's only about a meter deep. So I took two boards, placed their ends together in the middle of the channel, then pushed one board to the opposite side and lowered the other to my side. With the two of them angled up against the channel's edges, I laid another board horizontally across them.
I don't believe that would quite clear the water,
the Patriarch pointed out.
No, Your Venerante, it didn't,
Thalias agreed.
So I added two more angled boards, these set into the center of the horizontal, and placed one final horizontal across them.
Very nice,
the Patriarch said.
I remember one Trialborn who began as you did, but then simply laid more boards across the first horizontal until the stack was above the water level.
Thalias felt her lip twitch. Focused on angles and engineering, that solution hadn't even occurred to her.
Equally effective, but not nearly as elegant,
the Patriarch added.
I've always liked elegance, and your records during your Skywalker years suggested you were of that frame of mind. Indeed, that was why I made the decision to bring you in.
You brought me into the myth? You yourself?
Why not? He said. Watching over the family also means watching for those who will make the family stronger.
I'm honored,
Thalias said, feeling a sudden stifling sense of her own shortcomings and inadequacies.
I can only hope I'll someday be able to live up to your trust in me.
Someday? He gave another snort. Really, child, you've already repaid my trust many times over. Even now, you stand guard between my greatest achievement and those determined to destroy him.
I don't understand,
she broke off.
You mean Thrawn?
The Patriarch nodded.
Another whom I personally chose to join us.
Really?
Thalias said, frowning.
I thought it was General Barkeef who pointed the myth to him.
And who do you think pointed Barkeef?
The Patriarch countered.
Oh, yes. Labaki. That was his name back then. Labaki and I have known each other for a long time. I'm the one who told him about Thrawn and encouraged him to point that fool Thurfian toward him.
He sighed.
I saw greatness in him, Thalias,
he said, his eyes and voice growing distant.
Greatness and skill and loyalty. He will be my crowning, the memorial staff that will someday stand close beside my own.
He tapped his walking stick as his gaze clouded over.
If he survives.
I've seen him in battle, your Venerante,
Thalius assured him.
He'll survive.
You think I fear his loss in war?
The Patriarch shook his head.
No. Barring something unforeseen or uncontrollable, he'll never taste more than temporary defeat. No, Thalius. The threat to him comes from within the Ascendancy. Possibly from within the family itself.
He beckoned to her.
Come. Sit beside me, if you would. I fear I have but little time left.
Carefully, uncertainly, Thalius walked across the grass and eased herself onto the bench beside him.
What can I do for you?
She asked.
You're doing it,
he assured her.
You're listening to me, as few others in the family do anymore. More important, you're watching over Thrawn, working with him as an unflinching ally and assistant, guarding him against his enemies.
He waved out over the mountain.
The transfer of leadership from one patriarch to the next is designed to run smoothly. Usually it does, but sometimes it belies that promise. Even as we speak, there are several who are preparing their challenges and arguments, maneuvering for the moment when my walking stick is handed over to the historians and carvers for the version that will stand in the soil of the homestead. Some of those see Thrawn as an asset to the myth. Others see nothing but threat and danger.
He shook his head.
If one of the latter ascends to the Patriarch's seat...
He left the sentence unfinished.
I don't understand that,
Thalius said.
He's a magnificent warrior. How can they see danger in him?
The danger that he'll overreach himself, or take the myth into some adventure that leaves us politically vulnerable. Should that happen, our rivals will surely take advantage of our momentary weakness. These particular contenders for the Patriarch's seat would prefer to trade any potential glory Thrawn might bring to the family for the assurance that he won't bring an equal degree of infamy.
Thalius nodded.
Seeking a steady path without risks.
Which is foolish,
the Patriarch said, his mouth twisting with contempt.
A cautious path merely guarantees a slow slide to irrelevance. The myth must take risks. Calculated and well planned, but risks nonetheless, if we're to maintain our position among the ruling families.
For a moment, the only sound was the rustling of wind through the trees.
What can we do?
Thalius asked at last.
I honestly don't know,
the Patriarch conceded.
I've done all I can. Even as my life stretches toward its conclusion, so my power and authority wane.
He smiled sadly.
Don't look at me that way, child. This is as it should be, and as it must. The reins of command must be neatly gathered so as to be handed over to my successor without any sort of delay or uncertainty, lest the other families leap in to exploit such confusion to our detriment.
I understand,
Thalius said, shivering. She'd seen how politics colored relationships, even among the professional warriors of the fleet's warships. It must be far more virulent in the Sindicure.
Tell me how to protect him.
He has friends, the Patriarch said. Allies. He may not know how to gather them to his side when necessary. That will be your task.
He shook his head.
I knew from the start that politics wasn't his strength. But I never realized just how blind he was to those shifting winds.
I'll do my best, Thalia said. Assuming I'm still in the myth at day's end.
Still in the family?
The Patriarch echoed, frowning at her.
What are you talking about, child? Of course you're in the family. Your travel through the trials may not have shown brilliance, but it was more than adequate. You're officially a trial-born now, Thalius. Only one step from advancement to ranking distant.
Thank you,
Thalia said, bowing her head to him as a flood of relief washed through her.
But only if you aren't reported as apparently having fallen off the mountain,
the Patriarch said, some of his earlier humor peeking through the darkness of his warnings.
You'd best continue to the top. Study the staffs as you climb. Note the pattern and flow of family history. Meditate on the lives and triumphs of the myth.
And on their occasional failures?
The Patriarch nodded, the humor fading again.
Especially their failures,
he said quietly.
Note closely the gaps in the memorial record. The asymmetries where a syndic's or aristocrat's efforts have been cut off. Failure can be a harsh but capable teacher.
But only when those who observe it learn from it.
Indeed.
The Patriarch reached over and squeezed her hand.
Thank you for speaking with me, Thalius, trial born of the myth. And watch over your commander. I cannot help but feel that he holds the key to the Ascendancy's future. Whether that future be triumph or ultimate destruction.
I'll watch over him, Thalius promised. To my own life or death, I'll watch over him.
The sun had long since set, but there was still a glow in the western sky when Thalius finally emerged from the path. Thurfian had clearly been watching, and as she walked toward the mansion, he appeared through the door and motioned her toward a tunnel car waiting by the mosaic map.
Change of plans,
he called as she came within earshot.
I'm needed back at the Sindicure, and the Patriarch said I should take you with me.
Is there trouble?
Thalius asked.
None that I'm aware of,
Thurfian said.
But Admiral Orellani sent a message asking that you be returned to the Vigilant as soon as possible.
He gave her a suspicious look.
I also note that while I was conveniently distracted, Thrawn managed to slip away.
That was certainly not my intent,
Thalius said, knowing full well that she wasn't fooling him in the slightest.
But since you bring up the trials, when will I know if I passed them?
You'll think too much like a schoolgirl,
Thurfian said sourly.
The trials aren't an essay to be graded and returned after class.
His lip twisted.
Yes, you passed. You're now a trial born of the myth. Congratulations. Get in.
Thank you,
Thalius murmured. She sat sideways in her seat as they headed out, watching the mansion, the mountain, and the homestead fading into the distance behind them. until the tunnel wall abruptly blocked it from her sight. She'd never dreamed she would actually meet the patriarch of her adoptive family, let alone have a long and serious conversation with him. She would hold that meeting and her promises to him locked away in her heart. And even as a new chapter of her life was beginning, so now did an era in the Myth family's life draw to a close.
Memories 11.
Once, it was said, the March of Silence in Convocate Hall had been used by leaders of the ruling families to arrange for their enemies' censure, imprisonment, or execution. Its construction and acoustics were such that a conversation could realistically hold no more than 4 or 5 people without those on the outside edge being unable to hear what was being said in the center. But that had been thousands of years ago. Now, with the enlightenment that came from political maturity, the march had become a gathering place for speakers and syndics who wished to discuss political matters without one of them having to show the weakness inherent in meeting in another's office. As Counselor Thurfian watched Counselor Zistalmu approaching from the other end of the march, he wondered if the Arisi would appreciate the irony of the proposal he was about to lay out. Zistalmu's path was by necessity somewhat meandering as he carefully skirted the other conversational groups at distances calculated to avoid unintentional eavesdropping. Finally, he reached Thurfian and stepped up beside him.
Aristocra Thurfian,
he said, nodding.
Aristocra Zistalmu,
Thurfian returned the greeting.
Let me get straight to the point. I understand the Irisi have approached Senior Commander Mithron Yuru about detaching from the Myth and joining your family.
A flicker of surprise and suspicion touched Zistalmu's unusually unreadable expression.
I was under the impression such offers were confidential until and unless they were finalized.
It was a chance overhearing,
Thurfian said.
I also understand that he declined your offer.
Not officially,
Zistalmu hedged.
The offer remains open.
No, he's declined it,
Thurfian said.
You've seen Thrawn's record. He doesn't hesitate when he sees a tactical advantage. If he hasn't accepted by now, the answer is no.
Perhaps,
Zistalmu eyed him.
I presume you didn't invite me here simply to gloat at our failed attempt.
Not at all,
Thurfian said.
I invited you here to see if you had any interest in bringing him down.
The unreadable expression held firm this time, but Thurfian could tell it was a near thing.
I don't understand.
It's simple enough,
Thurfian said. Zistalmu could cause immense trouble for him, he knew, if he repeated any of this to one of the Myth counselors or syndics. But Thurfian had a good feel for Zistalmu's goals and politics, and he was pretty sure that wouldn't happen.
I've seen Thrawn's record, too. He has the potential to do great things in service of the fleet. He also has an equal potential of bringing ruin to the Myth, and possibly to the entire Ascendancy.
Zistalmu favored him with a mocking smile.
Bringing ruin to the Myth doesn't sound so bad.
The smile faded.
But the Ascendancy is another matter.
Then you agree with me.
I don't know how you made that jump from a simple comment in favor of the Ascendancy,
Zistalmu said.
But if we're being honest, yes, I see the same potential for both glory and disaster.
Though the rest of the Arisi apparently don't.
Zistalmu waved a hand.
The recruitment offer was their attempt to steal Thrawn away from the Myth.
I doubt any of them bothered to look deep enough into his record to see what you and I are seeing. So what exactly are you proposing?
At this point, nothing but watchfulness,
Thurfian said, feeling a slight lessening of his tension.
That should be easy to do, given that our two families have already signed us to watch over military matters. We simply continue that procedure, only with an eye toward coordinating our response if we see something dangerous in the works.
Won't be easy,
Zistalmo cautioned. His eyes narrowed in thought.
For whatever reason, he seems to have made staunch allies of General Bakif and Commodore Aralani. Those are powerful and influential people.
I agree, Thurfian said. Bakif's probably untouchable, but Aralani was once Irizi. She might still be amenable to pressure.
I doubt it,
Zistalmu said sourly.
I've talked with her once or twice since her promotion, and she's very intent on upholding her new non-family status.
Then we focus on Thrawn, Thurfian said. And perhaps some of his less highly placed allies.
You'd know more about that than I would,
Zistalmu said.
Very well. We'll watch and wait and see.
He looked around.
And, of course, we'll speak of this to no one.
Absolutely, Thurfian said. Thank you, Aristocra. Hopefully we'll never be called upon to act. But if we are...
Then we act.
Zistalmu gestured around the corridor.
I trust you noted the irony of our discussion. Given the March of Silence's reputed history.
I did,
Thurfian said.
We'll speak again, Aristocra.
Indeed, we will.
With a nod, Zistalmu turned and walked away in the direction of his office. And as Thurfian turned in the other direction, a belated thought occurred to him. The March's history spoke of some of the Aristocra being dealt with for crimes occasionally as dark as treason. The question was, whether Thrawn would be the object of any such future charge, or whether it would be Thurfian and Zistalmu. Only time would tell. Chapter 19. Thrawn and Ciri were gone for nearly 5 weeks, and with each day that passed, Thalias felt her soul die a little more. She should have been out there with them, she knew, facing the same dangers they were facing. The fact that her trials gambit had thrown Thurfian off the scent didn't really count as being useful to their mission. The Patriarch's command to watch over Thrawn just added that much extra knife twist to her sense of guilt. She therefore felt a huge sense of relief when Aralani finally called to inform her that the scout ship had entered the Chila system, that it was staying away from the capital itself for the moment, and that a shuttle was on its way to bring Thalias to the Vigilant. It turned out that the traveler's quiet and unannounced return was only the first of the surprises.
This could change everything, Aralani said.
Thalias nodded. Thoughts and possibilities spinning through her mind as she gazed at her questus and the details of the Republic energy shield Thrawn and Ciri had brought back with them. In a quiet spot in the back of her mind, she found extra amazement in the fact that Thrawn and Aralani trusted her enough to share their secret. But then Ciri knew everything too, and Skywalkers and their caregivers spent a lot of time together. The two officers had probably decided that Thalias might as well hear the whole story up front, rather than getting it in dribs and drabs from a 9-year-old.
This is light years beyond the electrostatic barriers we've been using,
Aralani continued.
We're going to have to rethink our tactics, our fleet array, the whole balance of power, everything.
But our advantage is only temporary, Thrawn warned. Even if we can reverse engineer the one we brought back.
We can, Arulani said. We will.
Even if we can, Thrawn continued. No technology remains exclusive for long. Once it's known to exist, others will develop their own version, or we simply steal it.
Not from us, Arulani said, her lip twisting. But getting one from the Republic should be easy enough. She tapped the Questus thoughtfully. The real question is why Yiv hasn't gotten something like this already. You said there was some group of aliens involved with the Separatists, didn't you?
Yes. But there's no reason to think they're necessarily associated with the Nicar Dune, Thrawn pointed out. Even if they are, they may have the same concerns we do. If they show the chaos that such a shield exists, the Ascendancy and everyone else will soon have one.
So they're thinking to use it as a surprise somewhere down the line?
As are we, Thrawn said. But unlike them, we can't afford to wait. We have to use it now, against Yiv, before he knows we have it.
Though he may already know, Arulani warned. It sounds like you and this General Skywalker made quite a loud mess out there.
She shook her head.
Skywalker? Bizarre coincidence.
I understand it's not that uncommon name in parts of lesser space, Thrawn said. But you're absolutely correct. There's no way the incidents on Batuu and Mokivja can be kept quiet for long.
Thalias winced. Running battles, interrogations, whole-scale destruction on a planetary scale? Incidents?
Fine, Arulani said, setting the Questus aside. You obviously have a plan. Let's hear it.
Thrawn paused, as if gathering his thoughts, and Thalias took the moment to give Ciri a surreptitious look. The girl had first greeted her with hugs and tears, some of joy and some of simple released tension. In that respect, she was very much the little girl who'd left the Ascendancy on this adventure. But as Thalias looked at her now, she could see that the journey had added more than a few weeks' worth of age to her. Not in the sense of aging exactly, with the extra stress or weight that might have been laid on her from weeks of danger or fear or exhaustion. Instead, it was as if a fresh layer of maturity and confidence had settled across the child's face.
First of all, we know Yiv isn't ready to take on the Ascendancy, Thrawn said. That much was clear after our first visit to the Leo Aeon Heartworld. Surrounded by his allies, facing an enemy he very much wanted to capture or kill.
You? Arulani suggested.
Me, Thrawn confirmed. He nevertheless withheld his fire and let us leave in peace.
It could simply have been a matter of time and place, Arulani said. But let's assume you're right. Continue.
We also know that Yiv is still working on bringing the Vax under his control, Thrawn said. That caution is evidenced by the fact that again, with Vax forces presumably available to him, he instead brought in Leo Aeon warships to handle the fighting when you came to extract Thalias and me from Primea.
I agree, Arulani said. And given your reading of the Vax passion for exploring all thought lines, it may be proving harder than he expected to get the entire leadership, let alone the entire planet, to follow him.
Exactly, Thrawn said. And therein lies our opportunity. If we can draw some of the Vax to our side, and show the rest that Yiv's intentions aren't to build them up in prestige, but merely to use them to fight and die in his battles, We may drive a wedge between them. If that doesn't halt his plan completely, it should at least buy us enough time to convince the Sindicure that the Nicardoon are a threat that needs to be dealt with.
Excuse me,
Ciri spoke up hesitantly, half lifting a hand. Thrawn and Ar'alani looked at her.
Yes,
Thrawn invited.
What if he just leaves Primea and goes somewhere else?
The girl asked.
There are a lot of other aliens in the area.
He could do that, yes, Thrawn said. But he's put a lot of time and effort into winning over the Vax. I don't think he'll give up without serious persuasion.
It's not just the Vax themselves, either, Ar'alani added. Primea is a center of diplomacy and trade for that entire region, a place where people from all those other alien species you mentioned come to talk and do business. If Yiv can get the Vak leaders to endorse him, or at least let him hang around and meet visitors, he'll have vectors into all those other nations.
We've already seen that he likes a mixture of conquest by force and conquest by persuasion, Thrawn said. Even his title, General Yiv the Benevolent, tries to have it both ways. No. I think that if we try to move him off Primea, he'll choose to stand and fight.
Or bring the fight to us, Ar'alani warned. Even if it's not his preferred timing, he might decide he needs to hit the Ascendancy.
He won't do it directly, Thrawn said. He's more likely to send the Patatis against us again.
And that's better how?
Better for him. Because he doesn't waste his own forces, Thrawn said. Better for us, because we already know how to beat them.
Well, you know how to beat them, Ar'alani muttered. Sometimes I'm not so sure about anyone else.
We can beat them, Thrawn assured her. But no, the crucial battle will be at Primea. If we can demonstrate Yiv's weakness and his treachery in front of the Vax, they may reconsider their choice of allies.
Sounds like a long shot, Ar'alani said. But barring any kind of direct intervention, I think it's all we've got. So how do we do that?
Thrawn seemed to brace himself.
We invite the Vax to help us. And as he laid out his plan, Thalias discovered that he had one more surprise left to offer.
You disapprove? Thrawn said.
Ar'alani eyed him, her head still spinning from the idea he'd presented to her and the two younger women.
Of course I disapprove, she said. The whole thing is totally illegal in at least three directions. Not to mention insane.
Agreed, Thrawn said. The question is, are you willing to go through with it?
Do I have a choice?
Of course, Thrawn said. If you don't want to be a part of this, say so now, and we'll do it alone.
How? Ar'alani retorted. If Yiv behaves the way you expect, the three of you will end up alone against the entire Primea force.
The Vax will come to our aid.
If the message gets to them, and they don't decide to ignore it.
There are clearly thought lines of distrust toward Yiv, Thrawn said. The message will offer another thought line. One I hope their culture will require them to at least consider. And if I've read Yiv correctly, he should soon find himself in deeper trouble than he expects.
If you've read him correctly,
Ar'alani said, leaning on the critical word.
Come on, Thrawn, this is crazy, even for you.
Do you see an alternative?
Thrawn countered.
We can't just sit back and let the Nicardoon close in around us, gathering allies and biding their time until the chaos closes around us and we stand alone against them.
Yiv has to be stopped. And this is the best time and place to make our move.
Again, what if you're wrong? Arulani asked. What if everything you're reading in Yiv and the Vax is wrong? You've been wrong before, you know.
It wasn't the most diplomatic thing she could have said, she realized, and instantly regretted it, as a flicker of old pain crossed his face.
I'm sorry, she apologized.
No, you're right, he said. My failure with the Garweans. But this is different. This is war, not